This right here is a podcast from PRI and Sarah Jones.
Hello?
It's Playdate.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. Okay, come on up.
Hey, you made it. Shoes off, please. It's New York. It's dirty out there. Through the hallway we go here.
My name is Edith Ann, and I am 5 1/2. That is this many and a little bit more.
I loved watching Edith Ann on Sesame Street.
And yesterday I made a sandwich, and I will tell you about it. First, I took 2 pieces of bread, and I put mustard on one of them and peanut butter on the other one.
The only TV I was allowed to watch when I was a little kid was PBS. And this was a source of great embarrassment. At school, I had to pretend I knew what was happening on He-Man and She-Ra and the Transformers. But I did get to watch Lily Tomlin on Sesame Street. And she was better than any cartoon.
Then I put the sandwich on the floor and I called Buster. He's my dog. And he walked around the sandwich and he smelled it a couple of times. Then he looked at me sort of funny and I said, "Go ahead, Buster, and taste it." But he didn't want to, so I tasted it myself. And he was right, it tasted terrible. And my mother was very unhappy when she saw the stuff on the tablecloth, and she asked me what I did, and I told her. And she says, "I can't ever make sandwiches again until I am 6. But that's okay, because Buster and I are going to use a telephone and just call out for pizza. Buster likes pepperoni with double cheese, and so do I. And that's the truth."
I can still see little Edith Ann sitting in her giant rocking chair. And years later, I saw a video of Lily's one-woman show, The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe, written by Jane Wagner. And the range of characters Lily could inhabit was so dazzling to me and also exciting because she was one of the first people who gave me permission to own the characters I could feel bubbling up inside.
Yeah, like me. I'm Miss Lady. You know, I'm the first person I think you did, Sarah Jones. I'm homeless. And that's important to say because I might not exist if Lily Tomlin didn't have her character, Trudy, who also lived on the street.
Yeah, Trudy was like a street philosopher with her tinfoil hat and her shopping cart. And while audiences may best know Lily Tomlin now as the free-spirited character Frankie on the hit Netflix show Grace and Frankie, for me, it was her multi-character work. That's what was so special about her. So when I started doing this podcast, Lily Tomlin was one of my dream playdates, and I'm so thrilled that you're here. Hi, Lily.
Hi, Sarah.
Now, Lily, I want to get my gushing out of the way. You know, I just love you. And I would say I feel indebted to you, but a debt doesn't feel like the spirit of fun and play that you and your characters have shown me all these years.
I think it would be just fine to Lily if you told her that you were indebted to her and were going to give her part of your income for the rest of your life. I think that would probably please her and placate her.
Okay. Well, I will talk to my accountants about that. But in the meantime, you know, we just got to hear one of your many voices. And I know this all started for you much the way it did for me. Like, you know, both of us dreamt up characters that came from our real lives, from our communities, from our family members. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I grew up in Detroit and I had Southern parents and everybody in the family was sort of wacky and funny and had an inclination to mock one another at the dinner table. Everybody, even in the South, I mean, they took the liberty of making fun of one another. You know, they'd say it was like somebody, "Oh, he's tight as he can be, just as cheap as he can be." Not terribly polite to say, but everybody in the family would get a kick out of
it.
Well,
you know, I just want to say, I know Sarah Jones wants to come back and talk to Lily real quick, but I'm just so honored, Ms. Tomlin, to be here. My name is Brenna Logan. I just think that you represent, like, you know, the image of the South that some people have. They don't realize that we are artistes. tastes. And, you know, I just feel that, like, you have this ability to, like, really show the culture, the best side of the South. And I just really appreciate that.
Well, where are you from, Berna?
Well, first of all, oh, my gosh, I'm so – my mom is going to be so happy and so proud that I get to tell you that she is from Georgia. My daddy's from Arkansas, and I grew up in Louisiana. So we like to think of ourselves as very culturally diverse.
Well, I guess.
But your family, they're from Kentucky, aren't they?
Yeah, all of my family are from Kentucky. Yeah, indeed. I mean, that generation of my parents. But I was born in Detroit and raised in Detroit. And I identify with Detroit more than I do the South. Although I spent every summer there, you know, my mother would go down to Kentucky to see her mother and her sisters. And she'd take my brother and me. We went on the Brooks bus, which was an old Southern bus line that serviced all the people that had gone, migrated to the North to work. And then they'd go home all the time, and they had to have a, you know, Greyhound, I guess, didn't serve all those cities, those small Southern towns, and Brooks bus did. And we just looked forward to it. It was just a great big lark to go down to Kentucky and be on the farms and see animals copulating. I mean, that was like the most exciting part of the summer.
The internet of Kentucky was those animals copulating, I bet.
It was. And you'd see that, and the huckster would come up to the blacktop, and you'd run, you'd say, oh, the huckster's coming. And you have to run up to the, up the dirt roads, up to the blacktop to get, you know, ice cream or candy bar or something like that. And the late supper's laid out on the dining room table and covered with a cloth. And you ate your big meal at dinner time at the middle of the day. And then you ate supper late. It was a whole other culture for me to be a part of. And I really loved it.
Because you're a city girl. I mean, you really, because, and I think about that because Lud and Marie, like, I've watched everything. I think sitting and watching those two people, it's like you just travel through time.
How's the cake, Lud?
Oh, like always, I guess.
Couldn't be like always. I never got this kind of cake before.
I thought something was different. How come you never get that chocolate kind of cake anymore?
Because the last time I got it, Lud, you broke out into a rash.
I did. I don't remember that. When did I get that rash?
Tuesday.
And when did I eat that cake?
Monday.
Must have been the cake then.
Did you know that you were kind of like bringing that to like people in New York City and Detroit and all these places?
No, I didn't. I just tried to imitate the neighbors and my family and all that stuff. And it was sort of a way of organizing the world into a more hospitable, acceptable form, you know, because I saw a lot of stuff that I didn't like as well. And I would, but I felt that the people were just acculturated differently, and they didn't have enough foresight to escape it all quickly. But I saw that the generations, and it takes a long damn time, but the generations slowly were widening and accepting more and more people.
One of the things that I love so much about your work is how welcomed I felt as a little girl watching Edith Ann or watching Ernestine, or I think I started doing my own version of, I mean, it wasn't Edith Ann, but I, you know, found my own. I mean, nowadays, I guess she's Bella. She's a much younger version of me. She wants to meet you.
Hi, Lily. Hi, my name is Bella.
Oh, Bella, I like you. You're like a sophisticated grown-up. You're like a sophisticated, like, if you were my sister, you would be much more special to me than my sister is, because my sister is a horrible teenager.
I really don't want to get into any difficult family dynamics with you, Edith Ann, but I do feel like now that I'm like much, much older, now that I'm like 20, I would love to be like a mentor to you, Edith Ann, if I ever can.
Yes, that would be great. I would love that 100 times.
You're pretty amazing. Sarah Jones thinks like Lily Tomlin is probably like one of the people who, like, besides her family, is most responsible for like raising her. And I think that, like, Lily should be careful about taking that on because we don't know which way this is going to go with Sarah Jones. But just so you know, she definitely considers you as one of her forebears.
Yeah, I do. And I feel really, really proud of that possibility that I could be, foster that kind of freedom and creativity. That makes me happy. I'm like many years older, but it's good. I mean, time comes on, people change and new people take over, and that's how it should be.
Well, Lily, this is Sarah again, and I want you to know something. When I saw you do Purvis Hawkins the first time, I almost fell out of my chair.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Messiah of Love, Mr. Purvis Hawkins.
I had to refocus my eyes on the screen to really get it that was not a black person and a black man. First of all, he's so damn attractive. I'm like, why can't Purvis be real?
Oh, he was good. When we watched the footage, we just flipped over Purvis. He was so good looking and so easy.
And he's smooth, he's charming, but most of all, Lily, I want to say it just felt effortless. It didn't feel like you had to do a lot of, pyrotechnics to find this character. It felt like you were so deeply in touch with the humanity of this person, and, it wouldn't even occur to anybody that you are... some of the things that I hear people worry about, Sarah, do you ever worry that someone will say you're stereotyping another culture or that you're, demeaning another culture? When I saw you do Purvis, I thought to myself, that's how you do it.
The thing is, it's like I tried to do the people that I knew or that I felt I knew, or I had a license to imitate. Or to show, or to, I was pretty American based. Being a white girl, but I grew up in a black neighborhood, so I had all that experience, but I never really got too far outside of those immediate types that sort of populated the culture at that time.
I got to ask you about this at one point. You shared that with me. You said, well, these are the people who surrounded me. And that helped me see that, I could also feel that kind of, it's I think entitlement is the wrong word. I think it's comfort. Like I felt a sense of community and connection to the people around me, just like even though you're a white girl, you felt connected enough to, the people in your community that you could portray a black person. You these are your neighbors or these are your friends. And so why not? And I think even in this moment, we need a revolutionary message like that that says, these are our neighbors, these are our friends, and we, feel connected to them, not separate from them. And you really did. You helped me give myself permission to, when it came time to portray somebody from India, I did not say to myself, oh my God, I can't do that because what if people get upset with me, etc. I knew that my deep experience of being with people from India, from Pakistan, from Bangladesh, all my different neighbors, that they would come to me and say, Sarah, you sound like my auntie. So if I can trust them, then I can trust myself. And that is what you helped to give me also, that confidence.
Well, it's you live in the skin because you're able to speak so fluently, easily as that culture type. It's a wonderful, wonderful gift. Talk about humanity. That's really at the heart of it, is that you're doing the people with a certain kind of love and respect of them as humans.
There's something so powerful for me, Lily, about knowing that you kind of come to this the same way I did. Both of us started doing this when we were little. And, I had a kind of topsy-turvy world going on. My mom was working really hard, my dad too. When it got lonely or I needed to kind of make sense of my world, my people came and rescued me. My characters would come and rescue me. And I wonder, did you have that? Did you feel
so
that
great
experience growing up? Did you what were the characters like in your life?
Well, they just lived for me as people, and so I loved to, I mean, I would find myself when I first started doing Edith, I had begun to open, I had gotten on Laugh-In. I'd been on Laugh-In half a season. And when we wrapped that first half season, I went on the road with Dan and Dick and opened for them with a couple of other Laugh-In kids, Johnny Brown, and there were two young guys who did an act. And we each did like 20 minutes to open for them. And I, of course, I did Ernestine. You know, I did a monologue as Ernestine because she was like the big hit from Laugh-In that season.
Mr. Beadle, it's me again. We seem to be disconnected. Now, Mr. Beadle, I want you to understand something. We are not subject to city, state, or federal regulations. We are omnipotent. Omnipotent. That's potent with an omni in front of it. Now then, Mr. Beadle.
And I was working on Edith Ann. I would be on the road. My manager would be driving us from college to college or whatever. And I found, so I, one day I'm upstairs, I see a bunch of old, like boxes and boxes of tapes. And one box was totally Edith Ann.
Wow.
I would just sit in the car and just improvise Edith Ann into a tape recorder. And it was fun. I just loved to do it because I loved to flesh out the character and find who she was and speak as she did and just make her richer and better, you know, get to doing her better.
I have a note my teacher wrote to my mother because my teacher does not like some of the things I do.
You better give it to your mother.
Yeah, well, I don't like some of the things my teacher does, so I'll write a note for her to give to her mother and see how she likes it. Did you see Buster? I took him roller skating in the park. He turned his ankle. I had to bring him home in a shopping bag. Buster looked good. Did you see when I dressed him up on Halloween?
He's a dog, Edith Ann.
Yeah, I dressed him like an Egyptian mummy. And then Bobber was mad when company came because we didn't have no more toilet paper.
Ah, toilet paper as a character prop. I relate. But I love hearing the process for developing these people, these fully realized human beings like Edith Ann. And I think I fell from the same multi-character tree. You know, for Lily, it was tapes. For me, it's letting my characters talk right into my phone using my voice memos. So the technology may have changed, but it's kind of beautiful to think the technique is still the same.
Yeah, you know, I feel that. This is Rasheed. Sarah Jones, by the way, you need to give me my own damn iPhone. But that's a separate conversation. We can have that right now because we're about to take a break. But when we get back, I'm going to get to talk to Lily Tomlin about what makes her and her characters so timeless. And plus, I get to learn something real cool, that even legends have feelings. You know what I'm saying? So that's coming up right after this. This Playdate with Sarah Jones from PRI and Sarah Jones. Real talk.
Okay, so you know those conversations brown people in America don't often have in front of white people in America? I think you know what I'm talking about. Well, Rupa Shenoy is having exactly those conversations over at Otherhood. It's a podcast from PRI about how immigrants and kids of immigrants understand their own Americanness. Yes, and how that understanding is changing day by day. So you can find Otherhood on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And, of course, at PRI.org. I'm Sarah Jones. Thanks for joining us for this playdate with the one and only Lily Tomlin. Well, she's really more the one and multiple Lily Tomlin. She and her characters have won Emmys and Tonys and Grammys, oh my, and an Oscar nomination. And to me, it is staggering how she can speak to so many generations, from kids who grew up on the magic school bus with Ms. Frizzle to baby boomer West Wing fans, to those who are quite a bit older than Lily.
Well, Lily, I have to tell you, this is Lorraine Levine.
Oh, hi.
And it's such an honor.
You live for me, I'll tell you. This character lives for me.
I really do. Maybe don't tell my husband. That could get complicated.
No, you absolutely live. That's what I think about a character when, you know, even a character like Ernestine, which is fair, seems to be terribly broad, but Ernestine's got such a strong personality that she survived. And she's nothing to, in no way am I comparing Ernestine to this woman that you're doing now.
Please do.
I mean, I know this woman, but I don't know her name exactly.
Lorraine, but it's fine. You can call me anything you want.
Lorraine. Lorraine?
Yes, Lorraine Levine. LORRAINE.
Lorraine, of course.
My family thought it would be more glamorous than Esther or Esty, which was my real name.
Oh, that would be. Oh, but listen, you just speak life to me. So I started to say about Ernestine, but, you know, I used to have a lot of fun with her. Well, you have to understand, we have to think back like several decades. And Ernestine is like, you know, everybody in the world imitated Ernestine.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy. Oh, a gracious good afternoon, Mr. Veedle. I'm Miss Tomlin, your representative from the telephone company. And you owe us a balance of $23.64. When may we expect payment? It's for three calls to Topeka, Kansas. You don't know anyone in Topeka, Kansas? Well, Mr. Veedle, that's beside the point. Now, when may we expect payment?
Housewives sent me photographs. I'd use their stoves, like those old upright stoves, as a switchboard.
is this the party to whom I am speaking?
And they would do it. It would just be great. And you know, and also kids would do Edith. So, and mothers would imitate Edith for their kids, so they put them to bed at night. But I'm saying, but Ernestine has lived in the culture because she was sort of like Betty Davis, like somebody that everybody did, and I was just one of the people who did her. That's how I always felt about her.
Well, I think your stamp on Ernestine and your the endearing, the reason kids and housewives and everybody, you know, kind of tapped into this kind of loving spirit that you brought to her.
Yeah, no, I understand. I feel that is true for some reason. And so, yeah, I get it.
Well, I think one of the most exciting things about your career is how timeless your characters are. You know, I'm going to bring out one more friend.
Oh, what's up, Lily? This is Rashid. I seen your work that you did with Richard Pryor. I seen your work that you did, you know, Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe or that. You know what I'm saying? And you done played like everybody boss. I mean, you been everybody's boss on TV. I love that shit. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, Lily Tomlin, yeah, if you want to, you know what I'm saying, if you want somebody to keep them in line, call Lily. You know what I'm saying? So you got all these different, you know what I'm saying, talents and everything in all these different areas. It means you really is ageless. That's what I'm trying to say. So
I like hearing that, you know. And so when you hear that, you say, yeah, that's good. And you go home, you can be kind of heartened by that for a few hours.
I hope you get a few more hours. It takes somebody real, real funny and real, real smart for me to be impressed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm sure of that. I'm sure of that. And I'm a little bit feeling good about that, but I feel a little insecure just, you know, because like it's, you know, like I'll be fading away in a sense.
Nah. You ain't never gonna fade away, Lily. For real.
Yeah, don't kid yourself, you know.
Nah. I seen your website, Joe. You got mad tour dates. You want tour more than Kanye West? You make these rappers look lazy.
You making me cry. You know, you're kind of making me cry a little bit.
Oh, Lily, don't cry. Well, I'm gonna let Sarah Jones come back real quick because
Yeah, I'm getting a little too overwrought.
Did Rashid overwhelm you with his fanboy obsession? He's a little bit obsessed with you.
Yeah, he did a little bit. You know, it's like it's like somebody who's young and super hip and out there and kind of knows what's going on, and he's a voice that, you know, he's more a voice of the future. Like all, you know, all your people are.
While I'm not in character, while I'm just being me, I want to know, what is it like to inhabit both of those spaces at the same time, both being Lily and knowing that you are this kind of this bigger energy for all of us? Do we sometimes need to give you a break, back off a little bit?
No, I don't think that that anything that I was exhibiting with Rashid.
Yeah, that's me. What's up? I'm still here. I ain't leaving you, Lily. I ain't never leaving you. Savage Jones wanted to come back, but I'm here though. I'm gonna still be here.
Yeah, that's cool. Thank you. I mean, I'm just saying what I was exhibiting is not out in the world because you and people, some maybe your characters have a feeling for me or some friends of yours or something. That's not overbearing or debilitating in any way. It's because it's part of your past as young people, young kids, and I hope that I have influenced in some kind of positive way. But it's not forever. It's not the end of the world. And time passes, and sometimes I lament not having that the freedom of youth. Not that you can't still discover and create and do stuff, but there's a thing of having been around for 40, 50 years that sort of undercuts that a little bit. You know, I'd have to it seems like I'd have to change myself radically to have any kind of real impact. And I lament the loss of that loss of when we used to throw things on top of a car and take off for a coffee house in the next city or go down to San Diego. I used to go down every weekend to San Diego to get out of the away from people writing about what we were going to do. And I'd leaflet real fast. I'd leaflet all the bookstores. And we used to say, like, you know, no costumes, no props, no actors, no refunds. And little tiny print would say, Lily reading new material and stuff like that. And we'd get an audience. We could drum up an audience that night, tonight at the Opera House or whatever we'd say. And that was, I mean, that was great fun. God, the youth of that is just so much fun and so cool. And all your pals that are with you that, you know, have contributed to what you've done because, I mean, they either ran lights or they ran sound or, and then we used to make packages of, we'd have a seal a meal and we'd make a pack that we could seal. We'd have like a sponge in it for makeup and a piece of flour from somebody who gave me some flowers and a battery from my battery pack. And we'd have a card in there that would say authentic, you know, celebrity artifact. And we'd sell them, we'd give it to the whatever group was. So it's really, and you're constantly trying to think up stuff like that to do, to, you know, kind of bring the community in. So it's just fun, that's all. It's a lot of fun. And you, as you get older, you lose a little bit of the sense of that. Mm.
I love the way what you described is basically a flash mob, just without Twitter or Instagram or Snapchat or whatever people are using to say, everybody come meet me, you know, come see us. No actors, no lights.
Oh, yeah, to get a crowd up.
So anytime you want to do a flash mob together, Lily Tomlin,
yeah.
I am there. I just think that everything about your path has illuminated my path, and I could not be more grateful, and neither could my people. So we all just wanted to tell you how much we love you.
Thank you so much, and I love you.
That just feels so good to hear. Okay, everybody talk amongst yourselves for a minute. I'm a little verklempt here. It's just, she's such a hero of mine. And if I have moments where I doubt that my work is worth it, I think I'll be able to come back to this conversation with Lily Tomlin to remind myself that I'm part of a lineage of performers, and in particular, women performers like Lily. The change she's made in my life, the changes she's made in the world through her work, that's enough to motivate me and to help me remember that for all of us, whatever our work and whatever our background, we are all standing on shoulders. And it helps when you're having doubts, which I think we all do, to think of the people you admire who have helped you become yourself.
That's right. And I think everybody should call someone who influenced you. You listening, why don't you do it? Call someone, text, I don't know what you do today. Tell them you love them.
Thanks, Lorraine. And thank you for listening, for joining me for this very special play date with Lily Tomlin.
For more about Lily and her work,
Make sure you check out the website, pri.org/playdate, or you can find us on sarahjonesonline.com. And Playdate with Sarah Jones is a production of Sarah Jones and PRI.
Yes, and is produced by Julie Burstein with sound design from Derek John. Kate Essig is our assistant producer, and Anna Avalon is our production coordinator. You know what we would love? Can you leave us a review on iTunes? And please don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. We appreciate it. Adios.